Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. Now listen, you're listening to the Castilbras podcast with a K. Don't worry about other podcasts. Let them gawp, let them gape. Yes, did you know that we're available on Castilbras.com, iTunes, Stitcher.com and Audioboo? Well, you do now. Good, isn't it? Ha!
Hello, people. Welcome to, I suppose it's the podcast with a K, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, I know it's just an audio thing, but just it's up to you whether you decide to speak or not. It's okay if you don't. If you want to leave me just sitting in an air in a vacuum of zero Americana voices, that's fine with me. I don't mind.
You know, I was just nodding before because I felt that was enough. But, you know, on audio, sometimes I feel nodding is just not enough.
It sometimes isn't. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it is. Normally when you associate it with speaking at the same time, like, for instance, I am speaking and I am nodding.
Right.
Slowly. There it works. See, it works.
So effectively, you're a Power Ranger right now.
Yes, I imagine so. I don't watch such children cartoons. Did you see how derogatory I was there by pretending I didn't even realize it was live action?
Yes, I did.
As well as children.
Very good. You've kind of ruined it, though, by telling people that you did realize it was live action.
Yeah, I kind of felt it'd be better than that in the comments having to tell us otherwise.
Yeah, good point.
I'm just watching the 1985 Children in Need appearance of the Doctors. Have you watched that yet?
Yeah, I've seen it before, actually. I was going to put it on myself, now you mention it, but hey. Whoops, I don't want to put that on, though.
I
have seen it. It was a pretty fun thing, that Children. I like the Children in Need stuff. I like that you guys get that over there. I like, obviously, the cause, but I like the fact that they do fun things like that for it. It's a shame because one of my favorite things is, I guess you all know from these podcasts before, was when they used to do shorts, those short scenes, and most notably, of course, the two David Tennant scenes, the post-regeneration and the time crash scene. I like them because they were made to be a little extra episode for the show and a little bit of fun with it. But it does seem when they did them later on with... Well, either we would get a trailer of the upcoming Christmas special, or they would do something like Matt Smith auctioning off his costume in character, which I didn't feel obviously could fit within the realm of the TV show. So I felt a little bummed out when they did things like that rather than episodes that actually fit within. But I like those things. But to see stuff like this with all the characters there, as many as they could get from the show, I think that's, it's a fun fan moment, you know?
It's interesting in the clip, which of course you can all see on Castilbras.com if you look for the massive Doctor cast appearance, Children Need 1985, has, if you didn't know what we're talking about, Children of Need is a UK charity-based television appeal for money. Doctor Who does something for it most years, or certainly has since about 1984 or so, I can't remember. And this particular one has all the Doctors and companions, or a large majority of them, appearing on set together, which is quite unusual to watch. I think the most unusual thing is looking at the 80s lot, because a lot of them have just finished, because by this point it was Colin Baker and Nicola Brandt. But you've got a sort of very long-haired Janet Fielding. You've got a probably jobless Matthew Waterhouse. I don't know. I'm sure he was doing lots of stuff. Mark Strickson looks extremely animated compared to Turlough. And Peter Davison is the only Doctor there who isn't actually wearing his Doctor costume. Looks sort of vaguely All Creatures Great and Small, maybe. I don't know.
Right.
So it's just quite a... Again, as a sort of almost like an historical analysis, it's kind of interesting to see them in the era, but outside of the context that you know them in that era, if you see what I mean.
Who's got K9 there? I couldn't make out that face. I'm sure they'll cut back to it, but I can't see who that is. A K9. Oh my God, is that... what's her name? Janet Fielding?
Yes, it is. It's Janet
Fielding. Yeah, it is. Jeez, yeah, look at that.
That's what I mean with the long hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's quite good. The Troughton and Pertwee's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, it was nice as well for Colin Baker to have a little bit of a... I mean, obviously he gets Troughton a little later on. But it's nice to see him sparring. So, yes, if you haven't seen that, as you can tell, this is a fairly podcast light this week.
Sorry, go on.
I was just saying we're chilling, aren't we? The boys are chilling.
This is just a hangout. Christian can't be here this week, so we get to do what we want to do, as is usual, when Christian's away. So, you know, sort of, in a sense, because we're talking about this clip, which is fun, but this was Christian's thing. So we're doing it to appease him. I feel it's safe to tell you all that.
Yeah, Christian gave us a long list of very boring Christmas things to look at, and now he's not here, I can just say, oh my God, how boring is that list of Christmas things to look at?
But I was still even listening. Tell me about it. No, but honestly, I do actually like this clip. I think it's fun to see them all together. I will say, though, what I was going to say was it is kind of sad. I know Peter Davison decided, like, after his first convention appearance and costume, that he wasn't going to do that anymore. But it seems a shame here with all the other doctors to not be wearing it.
Is that why he's not wearing the costume in this clip? I see.
But that's the only thing I can think of, because he said, like, during his time, because he was one of the doctors that actually attended a convention during his time as the doctor, and he went in costume, and he just felt never again. And it was after, so he only made one appearance in costume and decided, nope, not going to do that again. I don't know. I would have thought it would have been okay here, you know?
Oh, he did love his costume, didn't he?
How did he feel about that? Because honestly, I don't recall. I remember Collins, but not Peter. I didn't know he hated it. Yeah. Didn't he have a say in it? I thought it was partially his
idea. No, he didn't. I think he wanted a say in it, and I think he felt it was too tailored. That he wanted something that was Edwardian, but something that felt naturally Edwardian, not sort of a BBC costume department tailored.
Sure, sure.
I think he didn't like that aspect to it.
Well, you know, honestly, I agree with him, because I said for years, both he and Colin Baker, I feel they should have had something different, something less uniformed looking. I know most people don't like Sylvester McCoy's jumper, but I honestly really like his outfit. You know, if they could have easily replaced his jumper with something more 1920s through 40s style, you know, because they had sweaters like that that had the similar kind of patterns, and it didn't need the question mark. So I completely agree there. But I like his outfit. I think it works, because it is just kind of almost like a mixed bag that works together with itself. Whereas Colin and Peter, and I'm sure you can even say Tom Baker's final outfit, although I have to admit I actually like his minus the question marks, were very, very much uniformed. They were too perfectly put together. It just felt wrong. It didn't feel doctorish to me. And I know a lot of people like, well, in fairness, a lot of people like both of them. But I don't know. I just never really took to their outfits.
Well, it reflected the era, because the companions as well equally had sort of set stage outfits. You didn't really get much deviation in Turlough or Teagan, particularly. Maybe a couple of seasons was obviously a shift, but. By Adric, obviously. So it was, you know, part of the time, wasn't it, to give them something particularly iconic, and almost, it was almost like a comic-like approach, wasn't it? A cartoon approach, where you'd only have a set cell for Prince Adam to He-Man. So I don't know. As a kid, it never bothered me. As an adult, it does a bit, because you can't really... You can't really put it into realism, can you? Does he have a row of them that he just picks out the same outfit each day, or do they self clean? Or how do you live like that? And I suppose I like the idea of maybe the TARDIS somehow keeps everything quite clean somehow in a sort of weird high technological sterile way, because I can't imagine them just washing the same outfit over and over again. Or I suppose you might do if you, I don't know.
There was a big Finnish play that something had happened to Colin's outfit, and apparently there was like an onboard tailor on the TARDIS, like probably an automated thing. They didn't make it sound like it was a person or something like that. But you know, so aside from saying that he had a couple different outfits, for instance, let's look at David Tennant. You know, the Metacrisis Doctor walks away with his blue suit, but later on he still has one. So that at least confirms that he has multiple versions of his suits. You know. So at least we can assume he's got a closet. So either a replicator where he can go, hey, I really like that suit, can I get another one of those, please? or he just has multiple outfits. But at least with the new series, they understand, like, there is a look to a Doctor that is, you know, as they put it, their silhouette. Mm-hmm. But they tried to vary it. And in fairness, they tried to vary Colin's look with different ties and waistcoats and so on. But it gets so lost because there's not much you can do to vary a look when the jacket and the pants are so specific like that. You know, you can't take them away.
Maybe it's something to do with duration of age, in the sense that, you know, we'll go through the day wearing the same clothes. Now, if you live for 1,000 years, relatively speaking, maybe you would be quite happy wearing the same clothes for weeks, maybe years on end, you know, the same look, when I say clothes, rather than the hygiene factor, but the actual same style.
Yeah.
Maybe if you're an ageless character, your requirements of aesthetics change.
You know, and in fairness, when I get dressed for work, you know, I wear a variety of different suits, but when I am casual, I have about like 2 pair of shoes. I have a pair of jeans because lucky me, I can't find another pair that I like anymore. Another pair of pants, and then I have about like 2 or 3 jackets maybe that I'll rotate. So it's quite often that you'll see me in a very similar set of clothes because casually it's just, you know, we have our style. Even if they are different clothes, they're similarly themed because it's our interests, it's our likes, you know. So maybe it's kind of the similar principle in that respect.
I also quite like the idea, I think we've said this before, I quite like the idea that maybe the things like the Edwardian cricket suit that he wore was something that a character who wasn't human would think maybe the alien that humans would wear, and they don't, you see what I mean? It reflects almost like Colin Baker's did in the other way, that he thought everyone thought that would look cool, and to him it looked cool, but no one else did. The same with bow ties. It's that way to sort of try and interface with a society that you love, but you're not able to quite do it right, and maybe that's the sense that the Edwardian look.
Yes. The long scarf and so on, even the frilly shirts. I agree. And I honestly, that's something I've always felt with the Doctor, was that he always tried to dress how he felt he could blend in to the planet and people wouldn't notice. So, you can definitely argue that. And I guess that's why, despite the fact that maybe I don't like those 2 particular outfits, they still work for me. Like, I don't sit there and, you know, you can sit there and watch an adventure. And, you know, we talk about poor Colin's outfit quite a bit, as does he. But you can easily sit there and watch an adventure of his and forget that he's wearing it half the time because you're just watching the adventure. You know, it's over and done. You know it's a bad outfit, you know.
But at the same time, you could argue that a bad outfit will affect the audience. Because I remember as a kid, I found his outfit looked stupid. So I didn't want to be like Doctor Who, in the same way that people want to sort of dress up like Batman because they think the Batman outfit looks cool. Or they might want to dress up like David Tennant because it is actually quite a cool casual set of clothes.
Yeah.
It does affect how an audience, especially a young audience, will interface.
Yes, I absolutely do agree. And it's one of the things I've thought about many times when the show took its hiatus and came back for Trial of a Time Lord, why they didn't think to address that out of all the things that they did. You know, if it was one season of Colin with that outfit and then he had another one which is way more bearable, you know, I'm sure we would all be talking about, thank God he's not wearing that first season outfit anymore, you know, but I'm sure people wouldn't just be complete. I think poor Colin gets judged more on his outfit than he does the portrayal of his Doctor. And, you know, and I know that he does take a lot of flack for the choice of trying to be the crotchety Doctor, which, you know, somehow Peter Capaldi has pulled off. But I think the most criticism that I ever hear for his Doctor is that outfit. And it's one of the things that the poor man didn't even get to choose.
Well, it sort of also reflects how you perceive the character. If you perceive, I mean, if you take like Blackadder as a good example, with Blackadder between series 1 and 2, I mean, there's a big change in his character, but there's also a big change in his demeanor and in his clothes. And in the second series, they gave him clothes which were still leather. They're still black, but he carried them with a sort of more of an air of confidence and a certainty, and it does affect how you reflect on a character. So you could have someone who's quite bullish, like Colin was, especially in his first series. But if you change the clothes into something which made him look more stylized, more cool, people would take the bullishness possibly more like an anti-hero, in the same way that Avon in Blake 7 was a, you know, terrible rogue. But he always managed, Paul Darrow always managed to make him look cool no matter what he was wearing. And sometimes he had a lot of trouble with what he was wearing. But the clothes do inform, and later on when he was all studded with leather and black as well, it gave him a certain feeling of power and presence, which I think informed how he acted as well. I think he took that on board. So I do think, yeah, that the clothes are very important like that.
No, I definitely agree with that. Absolutely.
Just makes you wonder if he'd had what, because he always said he wanted what Eccleston had, didn't he? If he'd had that, I wonder how that would have informed, how that would have been decoded by viewers, how they would have taken that. It's a,
At the same time, too, it's kind of weird, and I don't know, I don't know how you'll take this, I guess, but Eccleston has the whole leather kind of aspect, the whole dress down kind of thing, but also with his attitude and his portrayal, he seems a little bit more rough and tumble kind of, you know, whereas Colin Baker always seems so dignified and, you know, that air of authority that Danny Pink accused Capaldi of having, you know, whereas if you were to put Colin Baker in Eccleston's outfit with the way that Colin Baker still acted, he might seem like he was a little too uppity for the clothes that he was wearing, in a sense.
Yeah, but then again, would that have informed how he portrayed him? Would that, you know, what we wear, would that have informed his portrayal? Would he have tempered it to how he felt in the clothes, if he felt cooler or a little more?
Yeah.
I mean, I still think a problem with Colin, a lot of it was, is that he was given the sort of pompousness and the humorous hypocrisy of the British archetype, you know, where he was the sort of type who would berate Perry for something and then do it himself, or say he was the best at something and it wouldn't work. But he wasn't ever given, he wasn't really given that softer side to compensate for it. So he just became across as an annoying comedy character, and it does jar. He was a very funny character, because all these elements that he had, you'll see in all the other actors' portrayal, but somehow they were sort of almost rough and tumbled into him in a way that just didn't perhaps suit him. I mean, because to a certain degree, he's not, I mean, he's a charming and smart fellow, but, you know, he's not got the dashing looks of Peter Davison, or the as you say, the ruggish rogueness of Christopher Eccleston. Maybe in a sense he needed something a little softer in there to have people warm to him, because unfortunately people do judge aesthetics a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, this big sort of big, tall, middle-aged, curly-haired, pompous guy is not a demograph which people are, you know, like. You can be pompous like that when you're old, or you can be arrogant when you're young, but when you're in that sort of middle-aged category, you've got to be careful how it's played. People don't like that. You're too young to be forgiven for being pompous, but you're too old to be allowed to be arrogant. It's a weird area, which is no fault of his own. It's what he was given and how it was done. You could talk about, you could write books on Colin, I think, just as a, yeah, where did it go all wrong, by every Doctor Who fan.
Which is funny, too, because when you see him in person, and you listen to his stories, or you have any kind of conversation with him whatsoever, you see why John Nathan Turner said this guy is a very charismatic actor, and why I want him to play the Doctor. And you can see that so clearly. He tells great stories. He's a great storyteller. He's fun to listen to. He's just an all-around fun guy. And somehow in the role, that stuff didn't carry over as well, and certainly not in the beginning.
But it carried over. It carried over in Big Finish.
Oh yeah, big time. Carried over in Big Finish.
So in a way, and I know you don't mean it like this, but just to clarify to people listening, it's not saying that he as an actor was unsuited to Doctor Who.
Oh no.
In fact, it's funny enough. If I speak to people a few years older than me, they preferred him to Peter Davison, who they found far more ineffectual, too ineffectual. So again, age category makes a factor. Yeah.
I also have a friend of mine who has admitted to me a couple of times that, you know, ever since he was a kid, he's wanted one of Colin Baker's coats. You know, there are some people who that outfit speaks to. Now, admittedly,
I like the way you said he admitted to you as well, as if it was a guilty secret.
Honestly, that's kind of how it was, too. It was like, you know, it's one of those things I really have to, because he said to me, we were talking about like getting a particular doctor's jackets. You know, we like frock coats, and we were talking about that kind of stuff. And he had to say, you know, I have to admit, essentially, I always wanted Colin's, and I was like, where would you wear it to? And then he finally had to just say, like, well, that's the thing, isn't it? He said, I want it, but I can't see myself wearing it anywhere. There's just something, that kid in me always wanted it, and so I still want it, but, you know, he doesn't think that he would be able to wear it.
Yeah. It's a tough thing, isn't it, that? I mean, I think there's a lot of things that sci-fi fans have that issue with, which is why conventions and cosplays are so popular, because there's not many places you could have a lightsaber dangling from your belt without it looking odd, or
right.
I know some people don't mind, or, well, I mean, you know this more than anyone, being as much a vestige of David Tennant than you are in yourself these days, I imagine, but
yeah, right.
Who am I to say? but yeah, no, it is a fascinating. I suppose I'm feeling the guilty ghost of Christian looming over our shoulders. I suppose we better talk something.
Oh, does that mean we have to get back to the list?
Probably a little. Well, I think we can deviate from a list a bit, but I suppose we should mention the Christmas episode coming up this week.
There's a Christmas episode this week.
I believe it's written by Stephen Moffat. It carries no reflection on any of the past Christmas episodes, so don't expect to see anything that directly relates to Christmas in it. Don't expect there to be snow. I wouldn't expect there to be anything that revolves around Christmas at all. It'll just be a Doctor Who episode set around the Christmas time, maybe. I mean, that would probably be as far as he would go. Apparently, there's been a load of trailers involved, and we've got little pictures of Nick Frost playing some unrelated guy to Christmas. I don't know, some obese bastard. Someone's father, apparently. Yeah, he's in it as well. How are you feeling about this? Christian said to us quite specifically, and he won't want us saying this, so I won't tell everyone, that he is concerned that we'll be downing the Christmas episode before we've even seen it. But Brian, what are your feelings at this point?
Oh, well, with a setup like that, what are my feelings at this point? Okay, yeah, I understand the purview, and it's really tough. I'll put it to you this way.
Yeah.
It's always nice to have Doctor Who for Christmas. It's always nice to get something new from Doctor Who. That said, I'm going into it with the lowest of expectations I could possibly have for a Doctor Who episode, because the Stephen Moffat Christmas specials have always kind of really let me down. So I am going into this one not expecting anything and hoping that I take some joy from it, especially since I absolutely do love Peter Capaldi's Doctor. So I am hoping that, you know, he brings something to it that makes me just sit there and go, hey, I feel the Christmas joy again, you know. And, you know, admittedly, some of the things in the trailer, you know, one of the things Christian himself even pointed out was the alien, or at least, you know, I don't know. To me, they look like they're little squids of some sort, because they've attached themselves to human faces. I don't think they're alien creatures. I think they're humans with alien creatures on their face. But they still do kind of look neat. I think they look kind of cool. I'm concerned, obviously, that they're bringing a Santa Claus character into it, but I'm hoping it's a ruse of some sort in some way, but we'll see, you know.
Do you think the Robin of Robots or Sherwood episode has made us more nervous about characters being brought in, so far as at the end of that it was pretty much suggested debunking every bit of historical accuracy known about Robin Hood, that he was actually Robin Hood and that Maid Marian was around then, etc., etc.? Is there a fear that this could go down the same route?
Well,
see how I use route just for you.
It's all thanks. Yeah.
Thank you.
Now on the just on the basis that it's Santa Claus alone gives me that fear. But when you bring that into it, yeah, absolutely there is. And only because the Robin Hood episode was told the way it was. Now, granted, we've all kind of admitted that the way that it was told was kind of okay when you get to the end where Robin kind of lets you know, I'm over the top because I'm trying to be over the top. You know, maybe people will buy it then, or make it a legend, or whatever you want. But at the same time, it is kind of like, I don't know. I think my biggest issue is, do we need Santa? Do we need snow? And do we need Christmas for an actual Christmas episode? I mean, if you look back at some of the best Christmas episodes, for instance, let's even go back to The End of Time. Okay, let's just take that for example. It just happened to take place on Christmas. You know, they made like a very, very quiet mention that it was Christmas Eve or something like that, you know, but they didn't really try and make any big, huge Christmas allusions. There were no robot Santas or anything running around, which honestly, I think robot Santas are a much better way to address Santa Claus than actually having Santa Claus within your story. Just because you can, it's Christmas time. Why not do something like that? But I like when they can do something like that. Like, hey, this thing just happens to be taking place on Christmas, but don't forget this show's Doctor Who and this is what it's really about. You know, it's not about Christmas every year. I mean, because what are we at now? It's nine. How many Christmas episodes are we going to have? Is this eight Christmas episodes? Nine,
mustn't it?
Yeah. Right. So, do we really need that many? I like Christmas. I love Christmas. I've always loved Christmas. And, you know, and Christmas movies and so on are fun to watch. But if I'm going to put on a Christmas story at Christmas time, it's probably going to be Muppet's Christmas Carol, you know, or It's a Wonderful Life or something like that, that is specifically about Christmas that I want to watch about Christmas. Doctor Who, to me, I don't know, man. I think too much is too much. This isn't being positive, is it? Christian's going to not.
That's the push,
like,
isn't
that.
It? Will the next one be It's a Wonderful Life? Because you're running out of Christmas themes now.
Yeah.
But, I think my only problem with the Santa factors is I've seen people say in the comments, well, it's for the kids. I'm still not convinced as a kid I'd want to see Santa and Doctor Who. There's some things as kids you do not mix. And people don't seem to get that. Kids are quite fastidious about their fictions and their fantasies. They don't like mixes in the wrong ways because it dilutes their little worlds. Well, it did for me.
Yeah, well, and you know, I'm sure some will like it, but I can always look at these things as my mindset of when I was a kid watching TV, because I've spoke about this many times before about how as a kid, I never related to the kids on screen. So whenever there was a kid who was supposed to be the hero in a story, it did nothing for me. I was always the doctor in my eyes, if I was 10 or if I'm 39, you know what I mean? So watching something like this, I do agree. Like, to me, I always just wanted to see a great space adventure or an alien invasion of Earth, stuff like that. And I don't know. That's why I'm hoping, like, this Santa Claus guy is maybe just some other guy who just is going around saying he's Santa Claus, you know, because it makes himself feel good or something like that. I don't know. But you brought up, or rather, I know I brought it up, but you had made mention that It's a Wonderful Life is probably going to be the next one. In all honesty, if Doctor Who were to do a Christmas story based on It's a Wonderful Life, I honestly think that would be the one that would probably work the best. Mm-hmm. Because it's something where you can actually get a great story out of it. What would the universe be like without the Doctor? But at the same time, we sort of got
a
taste of that with Turn Left. So, you know, but it's a shame because if you were gonna copy one of the Christmas stories, I would think that one would have the most value for the screen time.
I think it's very interesting. Sorry.
Go on. No,
I was going to say it's very interesting in the use of Santa, obviously, that Moffat and obviously Davis was beforehand, so let's not just point this at Moffat and John Nathan Turner is infamous for it, perhaps to a point where he gets far more stick for it than these pair do, is the use of characters to showcase or to promote the show. I mean, if you look at DWM, they've got a picture of Nick Frost as Santa on the front, you know, and that will obviously work for us at Radio Times. It brings together a very iconic visual for Christmas. People automatically notice Santa, and you've put them right next to the Doctor, which is the show you're trying to promote. It's a very, the same way he did use Dickens, the same way, you know, obviously the robot Santas, as you said, for Russell T. Davis. These are very smart marketing ploys. Is this a good thing or is it a bad thing? I mean, because with John Nathan Turner, people make it out as a bad thing that he would constantly get famous guest stars and he was very manipulative in showcasing and promoting and trying to get the show into whatever show, whatever coverage he could, no matter where. And yet with Moffat and Davis, you don't get that sort of same dislike or... Do you know what I mean?
Well, I think it depends on how it is. And, you know, from what I gather from John Nathan Turner's era, and you got to remember in there, I didn't know a lot of the celebrity guests that were being brought in until after the fact I found out, you know, who they were. But it's for me, it depends on, is the person being brought in for like a quick cameo where, you know, people are going to sit there and say, oh my God, Paul McCartney just did a walk on the screen and that's so awesome. But what did he really bring to the story? Or are you bringing people in because of their talent? you know. And in fairness, I do want to say, like let's take a look at like Simon Callow playing Dickens, since he was probably the first one we had gotten. He was great. He was a great actor. He played the role extremely well. And you know, again, I guess in on my side of things, I didn't necessarily know him, so to me, he was just a guy playing Dickens. But I didn't get a sense that they brought in this heavyweight guy just to bump things up, who came in there and just walked in and said, "Hey, I'm Simon Callow, and I'm on Doctor Who, and you're all going to watch it just because I'm here." I got a sense that he was playing this great character and using his talent to do so. So I think it's a big difference if you're actually bringing somebody in who can go ahead and go, "I'm an actor, I'm playing this role," rather than, "I'm a celebrity, I'm going to be myself on screen, but they're going to dress me up to look like this person." You know, and I think there's a big distinction there.
Okay, so how about something positive to say about this upcoming event? Well, what sort of positive? Three positives, Brian, because we've obviously grumbled a lot here. Let's have three positives.
Positive number one is I am looking forward to more Peter Capaldi. I really do enjoy his Doctor quite a bit. I am really anxious to see these aliens. I you know, it seems like it is some kind of invasion, and you know me with invasion stories. I really am looking forward to that. And the third positive, I really, it's tough. Visually, cinematically, probably is one of the third things I'm looking forward to, is because this whole season that just passed had a lot of really good shots, angles, style choices of the whole season. And I think I'm looking forward to seeing how they're doing this, because it does look like it's got a lot of different elements to it, where they're going, the base under the snow, in the snow, and so on. So I'm really looking forward to how they pull all of that stuff off, because it does look very visually appealing.
Brian, A, Terra Nova.
Aye.
Clara and Capaldi, or Clara and the Doctor, should I say. Let's not mix reality and fiction. Are you excited to see them again for possibly one last time, or is that something that would draw you in? Would that be a third positive or fourth positive?
You know, no. Sorry,
Christian.
I'm very curious about your positives, so we're going to get there in a moment. But no, it's not. And I'll tell you what, I like Clara, and I think she was a good character. And I was really excited when she was doing Capaldi's series, because I was like, wow, they're going to focus on the human aspect of her. And in fairness, they did in many respects, but I think they just didn't do it in a way that made her appealing to me. You know, it kind of brought me back to Peter Davison's era, when his companions just kind of didn't want to be there. Mm-hmm. And I never understood that, you know, because to me, you're with this guy who can travel anywhere in time and space and see and do anything. But, you know, you just want to go back to being your flight attendant job, you know, or, you know, and anything, you know, just want to go be boring somewhere. And I didn't get that. Now, Clara was a little bit different. She really liked the adventure and the danger and so on, that's the one thing that still bugs me about new series companions, is that they like the danger. I don't get that. I understand. Maybe you can like that you're helping people. I think that would be a better approach. Yeah. And I can certainly understand when they show us that, yes, the Doctor and the companion do land on paradise planets and have some great fun in like an amusement park every once in a while, rather than they always land and it's always danger. I think that's a bit silly, because granted, if you were always in danger, I can see why you wouldn't want to be there. But with Clara, it was kind of, you know, showing her more human side started to make me kind of dislike her a little bit more, unfortunately. You know, like lying to the Doctor, lying to Danny, really just didn't make her a likable kind of character. When she would get angry at certain things, it was kind of like, you know, there's an angle here that I can see why you probably wouldn't be upset, or at least be understanding of why something happened. But because the writers don't want you to be understanding, now I can't relate to you, because you can't see that angle. And I don't know. So I'm kind of a little disappointed. You know, I was honestly, as much as originally by the beginning of the season, I would hope that we would have had more of her. Now I'm kind of ready for a new companion to come in, some new blood.
Yeah, I feel very much the same. When Clara first appeared, I wasn't sure. And then she grew on me with, I think, because her dynamic with Smith was just so nice. It was just so gentle. And I was really looking forward to seeing what she would do with Capaldi. I was looking forward to like a sort of paternal sort of connection and something that was sort of that worked in I don't want to say a classical way because that makes me sound like I'm harking back for old times, and it's not. I just thought that would be a nice difference to the Smith one. There was this like this paternal daughterly sort of relationship, and what we got in the end was just a bit of a mess. And she was annoying, the Danny Pink thing. Even though I quite like Danny as a character, it just felt just felt irritating and always in the way and just unneeded. And it just destroyed. What it's almost like to me, you know, the companion, the Doctor. If you're going to have one companion and the Doctor, it should be sort of like. I'm trying to think of duos which relate to the States as well as they do here. But I was thinking comedy duos. I mean, I was thinking Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie. If you had Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie doing comedy and you had this other guy who suddenly had to come in between them and start taking over the gags, it'd annoy you because you'd say, I've come here to watch Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie. I like how they work together. And suddenly you've got this other guy who's quite a nice guy. He might even be quite funny. He's pushing in the middle. And it's like, just get out of the way. I'm interested in watching these two work together. You're really nice. I'm sure you're great. I like the look. Good actor. Just get out of the way. So here's a positive. Could the positive be that we will get something a little more like we were kind of hoping this series, if it is Jessica Capaldi and Coleman? Could that be a positive?
Yeah, it could be. You know, yes, it very well could be, because I was going to say that they still can salvage what they've done by turning things around and pitting just the two of them together and making them see the fun times again, or at least just getting along in a different way. But, you know, we still have the whole in my mind. I guess what it is with Moffat, I'm always braced for the worst. And that's kind of sad to say. And, you know, not being positive, but whatever. Because we have the whole Orson Pink thing, and I know that he spoke about it in an interview and so on, and it's like,
vaguely,
really? Like, give me a break. Like, Clara's either going to be pregnant, or you're going to find some way to bring Danny back, or you're just going to ignore the situation, and then, you know, the explanation of who he is going to be left to an interview rather than within the show, you know, and that sort of stuff just bugs me a little bit, you know, and it could be good. It could be great. It could be even as it's called Last Christmas, which I think is, you know, not necessarily true, but as it could be that whole goodbye Clara situation, whatever. I don't know. I'm curious. I'm wanting to like it. I'm hoping Christmas Day to sit down and enjoy it. And as I said, going in it with like low expectations generally is helpful. But I don't know. I really don't know what to expect from it. I really liked, to be perfectly honest, I really liked the end of the series, the very end, when Clara and the Doctor left each other, because what I liked about it was that whole misunderstanding.
Yeah.
I liked that they both kind of believed each other was in a better place already and decided to leave them in that better place for their sake. I thought that was great character traits for the both of them. I thought it was a great end, and I thought it would have been perfect if that's where they were actually left.
Yeah.
And they did that in the big finish with the Eighth Doctor and Charlie. And they kind of still continued Charlie's adventures after that. But the whole point is, it was great. Like, the Eighth Doctor and Charlie have never found out that the situations were not as they actually left them. You know, they both left. Well, I guess technically Charlie knew that thing. She left in a different way, but the Doctor never found out. The Doctor had this note left from Charlie that said, you know, it's time for me to move on. She had changed her mind, and something in the adventure sent her in the far future and left her stranded there, essentially. So the Doctor found this note because his memory had been wiped and thought Charlie just left him. So he never knows that Charlie's just lost somewhere and continuing adventures on her own. He thinks she just left in Singapore. And it was great. It was a beautiful kind of moment. And I thought, wow, they're doing that here. Because you're not having a companion leave because she's angry or upset. She's not getting forcibly evicted from the TARDIS. You know, they're not getting like killed or something like that. It's just two people sitting there going, you know what? Your life is in a good spot right now. I'm going to let you go. I can't ruin your life anymore. And I don't know. It's a shame, I think, to take that away, because I thought it really worked.
No, I can understand that. I mean, I was looking at some of the Smith episodes, and the ones with Clara, and I was thinking, I don't know if I like you anymore. And isn't that horrible when a character is marred by, because in a sense, you know, last series I thought was a nice showcase for Capaldi in the sense that it gave people the feeling that an older actor could be the Doctor. And I really do believe now that people again see the Doctor as an older character. I think he's managed to place himself neatly as the Doctor, not and no longer Matt Smith, it's him, and I think that's great. There were some good stories in there, but I still think it felt like a very, you know, looking back at it, a very mishmash, confused series. Not just so much in the fact that they seem to utterly go the wrong direction with Clara, but also, I mean, I still feel that the Doctor was very much uncertain. He did seem to sort of, his personality did seem to fluctuate per story, as if it was contextual to the story rather than consistent to himself. And even down to the last two, where he seemed extremely ineffectual, to a point where I didn't believe that the Doctor that I'd seen in Dalek or in Listen would be sitting there gobsmacked at Missy's rather obvious one-liners. It just didn't feel quite the same person. So I'm kind of hoping for the Christmas one, they've got a little more space and he's had a little more time, that they can actually establish, you know, a control for what the Doctor's like. And from hopefully from here on, we'll get something more consistent. Because as I say, yeah, I think it was a great series to bring him in. I do feel, though, when you look back at it, it was a very messy series, more messy than it needed to be. And hopefully this will. Yeah, I'm kind of a bit like you. I go in with low expectations, hoping to be impressed at Christmas, because that's the way I am.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of hoping this will impress us in that sort of way. So for my three, which are going to be hard-pressed, I must admit, I wasn't going to give three. I was hoping that you'd forget that I'd sort of suggested
both of us. Oh, you're not getting off the hook.
No. I think I would tentatively say that I am looking forward to seeing how Capaldi portrays the Doctor in this, and see if how it relates to the previous series, hoping to see some sort of solidifying of personality. I am sort of looking forward to Clara in the sense, as I said, I felt that the Danny Pink storyline damaged her a lot, and maybe this would be a nice swan song if she is leaving. So there's that factor. And, you know, it is enjoyable to have Christmas with Doctor Who. And I'm just looking forward to that. No, the Father Christmas thing from the trailers has not touched me at all. It's irritated me. As has his little pixie people. They've not lightened the story up for me from the clips I've seen. Mm. So, oh, God, seen this dynamic before. Very easy comic relief. So that's not particularly amazing. The aliens look pretty cool, though. Yeah. That looks fun.
Well, you know, it's funny, too, because I agree about the comic relief thing. And, you know, as I said, too, with Dan Starkey, he is a funny man.
Yeah.
He's very good, but I'm you know, Strax made me very tired of him. Maybe this Christmas story will change that. You know, maybe I'll sit there and go, oh, okay, I was wrong. These guys are fun. I don't know. But it's interesting because I am tired of, like, the comedy duo or the silly comedy stuff in there. Yet it's something that always used to work so well when Robert Holmes would do it.
Yeah,
and it's just weird to see, like, why. I guess it means that, you know, you can't just put two people together, throw some jokes at them, and mean that they're going to be funny and it's going to work. You know, you really need to have very well written and interesting characters in every respect there, and I think that's just a big part of it for me.
Holmes is, while they're often, and you can correct me because it's a big era to sort of generalize, his comedy characters, while very thespic, were sort of fairly subtle in some respects, in the sense that they were very they're very diegetic, weren't they? They were, so their comedy was very much within the world, while a lot of the comedy we get now is almost slightly thrown at the audience.
Yeah.
As if the audience knows they're far too large than life and we accept it just because they're funny. I don't know if that's fair.
I think it's fair. I mean, I would say that Jago probably was a little bit more over the top, but you know, it's kind of, I'll put it to you this way: if you do kind of like one over the top person and the rest are kind of a little bit more straightforward, that's not really a bad mix. kind of thing. But if everybody's kind of over the top,
but you know, maybe that's the point. Maybe because Jago was over the top, but he fitted the archetype of his position in the story.
Yeah,
he was the pompous businessman, and that was what was parodied. What you're getting now is you're getting parodies of the archetype. So an elf, you expect to be quiet and doing as it's told, but it's not. It's grumpy or commenting in the background, making quips. It's, you know, the same with a Sontaran, who should be very warlike and serious, is played, with jokes. And so they're sort of parodying the archetype rather than fulfilling the archetype, which is what Holmes was sort of doing. He would sort of play with the archetype and send it up within its own context. Well, I suppose you could argue a Sontaran, I suppose Strax does do that. He is within his own context, he's sending it up. But it's not, it's by not playing true to the archetype, really. Because, I mean, I suppose, to be fair, I mean, while he is all very Sontaran, there's no way before Strax you'd ever imagine a Sontaran staying as a butler with anyone. It's, yeah, it's against the whole code of a Sontaran, and that's never really sort of been explained for me. But
yeah, well, honestly, when they first introduced Strax, and they made him be like a nurse on the battlegrounds as some kind of punishment, I kind of thought, okay, that's an interesting idea. You know, what could you do to actually punish a warrior? You know, you put him in prison, fine, whatever. But here you make them, they're not allowed to fight. They have to repair other people from the fight instead. I thought, okay, that's kind of an interesting concept. But then anything after that, and even within that story, it was too silly. And I've said it before, I think Strax was kind of the death of the Sontarans in the new show, because rather than make them be like brilliant strategists or warriors, you know, they were just comic relief. They were people who just didn't get things. You know, they were kind of idiots, and that bugged me. And it's going to be a very hard trip for the Sontarans to get back to being, with the Cybermen and the Daleks. You know, where you know, I always thought they should be. I always thought they were great. And I don't know, I was always welcoming, like when they came back in Russell's era, I was very excited for them to come back. And I thought that they were character-wise handled well, but I felt the direction of the story was shot, and I've said this before, I guess, but it was shot a little too Sarah Jane Adventures, and of course the outfit changes made them look a little too childish as well with the colors chosen. You know, if the Jadoon didn't come before them, we probably would have had a more traditional look, which would have helped them keep that kind of darker warrior kind of look to themselves. But again, the episode, by having all the pinks and the purple kind of colors and the way it was shot a little too kiddish. So the new series, you know, I don't want to say it's just Moffat with Strax, although I do feel that's a big part of it, but the new series kind of took them down a path that just kind of started this decline. And I think it's a shame, because they were a very cool idea, and they were handled very well in the past, I thought, for the most part.
Yet at the same time, Strax is one of the more one of the elements that I actually genuinely, well, that makes me sound, I don't enjoy Doctor, I do.
Yeah.
But he is an element of when he's in the show that I enjoy. His one-liners are very well written. I mean, as I said, the first time that he started to get weak was in Deep Breath, where I felt they were sort of creating scenes solely for him to be humorous.
Yeah.
And it seems to be the wrong way around for me, but
well, you know, whereas it's the opposite for me. Like once in a while, one of his jokes will make me chuckle, whereas otherwise, I'm just sitting there going, "Oh God, this guy again." You know, like I just, because it's okay. Like I don't get it. If Strax was in a story, and he was that funny guy in one story, it probably would have been okay. That was kind of silly. But now that he's been back so many times, it's exactly like you said in Deep Breath. Like there was nothing funny about him in Deep Breath. The only funny thing that he did that I actually got a chuckle out of was when he threw the paper at Clara. And it wasn't because he had done that. It was because she actually played getting hit by the paper so well. I thought it looked very realistic and silly, you know? And I just thought when she got hit, it was pretty entertaining to me. But other than that, I don't find him entertaining, you know, I don't know why it is. I don't know if it's because he's a Sontaran and I think they shouldn't be that way. I don't know if it's just because I don't find it funny, or if in the particular episodes that it's in, I don't feel it's appropriate or right. You know, I don't know. It's just not something I enjoy. I do have a question for you, getting off Sontarans and so on, because I'm curious what it's like over there. Over here, you know, everybody does that, you know, the malls and so on, they still put out their Christmas trees, Christmas music still plays, and there's Christmas sales, but most of them get labeled as holiday sales. And if you're walking down the street and you see somebody and you want to say Merry Christmas to them, it's apparently offensive now to say Merry Christmas. You have to say Happy Holidays because you don't know what they celebrate, you know? So rather than saying Merry Christmas and having people get the sentiment that you're just wishing them goodwill, you know, it could be, oh, you know, I don't celebrate that, you jerk. Why are you doing that? And to be fair, I don't think I've ever really encountered anybody who actually took offense to it. It's just, it's apparently not something you're supposed to do. Go figure. So having Doctor Who every year do a Christmas special, is that something over there? Like, do you guys, first of all, do you guys get that kind of stuff over there? Before I ask this question, do you get that?
We're aware of it. I mean, I'm aware of the frustration more from your little island.
Yeah.
Than our giant one. I've heard many people say similar. I sort of understand the rationale behind it, in the sense I think it's kind of good to open people's minds up to the idea that people are different, and they had that holiday period, they all celebrate, a lot of people celebrate different things.
Yeah.
I think that is a kind of nice ideology. I think practically you can't change people like that. You can't, people are, you know, you grow up in a certain way. It's almost like sort of turning around and saying, you know, homophobes out there, this Christmas, be nice to a gay person, because it's not going to happen. If someone's, you know, fears right. gay people, they're not going to suddenly change. If people are used to, I know it's a very bad analogy, that if people are used to Christmas being about Christmas, expecting people to suddenly go around and wishing people happy holidays, it's not going to happen. I would say it'd be better if you were to sort of try and they do, teach kids that what people do in the holidays around Christmas time, that it's not just about Christianity, you know, what Jewish people do, you know, that sort of thing. I think is good, you know, educate people, but don't enforce or expect socially. So no, we don't get that over here yet. I think Christmas is still very much held as the rightful English British holiday, and I think that's fine. I think I like to think, I get myself into trouble, that if that is your country's pretty much their holiday, that's what you expect it to be. Although, yeah, you should also be aware that other people have different beliefs and different times that they spend. But ultimately, it's Christmas time. That's the British tradition. If you're in Britain, you expect it to be. That's what Christmas is. That's what the holiday is about. It's about Christmas. Yeah, and I'm kind of glad that, yeah, we've not got into that with TV yet. Doctor Who hasn't.
Well, and you know, I was going to say, obviously, we still have, you know, TV shows will do their Christmas episodes or their Christmas special, movie of the week will come on or something like that. And of course, we still do Christmas movies. So it still is a big thing. And I don't want to downplay it that, like, we've been pushed into a corner. We can't do this, that, and the other. It's definitely not that. But, like, you know, to me, if somebody, you know, walked down the street and they saw me and they said, Happy Hanukkah, I wouldn't sit there and go, I don't celebrate. I would just say thank you, you know, because I know what they mean. You know what I mean? And I appreciate it, you know? So to me, it's kind of like, you know, if we want to put up Christmas decorations, cool. We'll put up Christmas decorations. You want to put up Hanukkah decorations or Kwanzaa or whatever decorations or whatever kind of things you do for your holidays, knock yourself out. Go ahead and do it. You know, I think that's great. I just think it's a bit silly to kind of make it seem rude that somebody said something to you that maybe you don't celebrate. You know, I think that's a bit silly. But where I was going with the question was, and I guess technically it's already been answered, since primarily it seems that you guys are still Christmas, the Christmas theme over there. But every year Doctor Who has done a Christmas episode, rather than maybe we should embrace talking about Hanukkah or something like this and put other awareness out there. But I guess that's obviously not going to happen if you guys are bigger on the Christmas thing.
Well, I think the problem with Doctor Who is that it's a fascinating show from a sort of, you know, from, I don't know, social, political, or whatever you want to call it, sort of view, that it embodies a tradition, a television tradition now, which has lasted over 50 years. At the same time, it is a flagship for the BBC. At the same time, it's marketing as a piece of as a commercial unit. And so it will look to adapt its surroundings to platform itself. You know, come Christmas, you can sort of see why Davis and Moffat very cagily decided, and the rest of the team, that they should really focus, rather with lack of subtlety, on exploiting the Christmas myths of Dickens, of Lion, Witch in the Wardrobe, of Santa Claus, of robot Santas, you know, spaceship Titanic. Well, you know, perhaps some aren't quite, but yeah, I think it's a very interesting thing where I feel it in a sense. I suppose the argument is it's very mainstream. It's a very mainstream show now, and because of all those factors, and none of those factors are bad, but because it's mainstream, I probably imagine it is one of the problems for Doctor Who is it prevents it from being particularly, I don't want to say liberal is the wrong word, or organic. It prevents it from trying different things, and perhaps is what sets into such rigorous formats, is formats that it's safe with because it has so many of these conditions it's got to fulfill. And so come Christmas, rather than feeling, hey, let's do one where Christmas isn't the issue, let's do one that has a story about Daleks on a spaceship, which of course has never been done before, with dinosaurs and a Santaran and two pixies. You know, they don't do that because it's like, well, yeah, but we could be missing the chance of really promoting the show by using Santa Claus at Christmas time. So you've got that sort of very mainstream drive behind it. So the traditions and the politics of the country, I don't mean politics, but, you know, social politics of the country, sort of drive the show more than its ability to do things differently. And maybe sometimes that's why we end up on podcasts saying, isn't the show feeling a bit stagnant at the moment? Well, shouldn't it be doing this rather than that? Like we've just said this episode, should it be doing something so on the nose Christmas? Perhaps it can't anymore. Maybe it's in a situation where it's no longer able to. And maybe in that case, that's why, you know, we're very thankful for the more adult fans have got Big Finish to turn to and to embrace.
It is interesting, too, because when you look at it, you know, Christmas Invasion made sense to be set at Christmas time. You know, it actually worked story-wise. You know, the Doctor is bringing her back to a time that's supposed to be happy for everybody. And, you know, there's a situation going on there, and it just happens to be Christmas. I think it worked well. I think it was the first one. It was a good idea. Technically, it wasn't the first Christmas story they did, but it was the first Christmas special. But then you get to the next one, which is The Runaway Bride, and you look at that story, and that didn't need to be set at Christmas.
No, it didn't.
There was absolutely no need in there, and it was just kind of like you know, even in the story, even Donna is kind of saying, you know, I never really cared about Christmas. That's why we put the wedding on this day. You know, it wasn't really a big holiday for me, you know, and it's like, okay, well that's great. Great message, you know, but you didn't need it to be set at Christmas, especially since the episode looked like it was shot in August anyway, you know, you know, everybody's like sweating their butts off. But then you get to Voyage of the Damned. And I love the fact that they kind of really deviated. They put it in space. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't a big deal that it was Christmas, although yes, they did have the angels, you know, but I kind of liked the theme of that still. But what I really liked about that story more so was, here's these aliens coming to Earth. By the way, they're celebrating this thing. It's called Christmas. Let me tell you all about it from my studies. And the guy gets it so incredibly wrong, which made it humorous and fun, you know? So I mean, I guess if you just look at like those first three that we had gotten there with Russell, you know, one was centered at Christmas, made a lot of sense because it really showed again for Rose's character what it was like going off into space with some guy and kind of leaving your life behind. Then you get another story that really Christmas didn't really make a difference. It could have been there, could have not been there. And then you get another one where you can play with the format a little bit. But then you get to Moffat's, and what did we have? Like, well, Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe remake. That wasn't even a Christmas story. He turned it into a Christmas story. The Christmas Carol remake, which again it's a remake, but you're doing a Christmas story remake now. We get Santa Claus. I know I'm missing one in there because I'm not too keen on his, so I don't remember them too well, but it's like too much Christmas, too heavy hitting Christmas in my opinion. I would like something a little bit more subtle or different, even just different something. I don't know how to say it, and I think that's what it is. Like the Christmas stories come around, I'm looking forward to them because it's more Doctor Who, and believe me, I always look forward to more Doctor Who, but I don't know. I will say, out of all the Christmas specials, the ones from the Moffat era, I don't watch them. And I rewatch practically everything Doctor Who's ever made. I don't rewatch those Christmas stories.
No, well, I must admit, nor do I. I've never had any interest in rewatching them. But, I mean, it's worth pointing out before you get people on the comments that say, you know, oh, if you don't like Doctor Who, why do you watch it? I think, okay. You know, go to Brian's Facebook page and see how much Doctor Who stuff he's got from all eras and then try and say, no, he doesn't like Doctor Who. He loves Doctor Who. It's not about people, you know, watching a show that they just hate it. It's about people who love a show, who've got high expectations. And sometimes, as a personal perspective, it doesn't meet them. And, you know, if it, as I've always said on these comments, you know, if it's met your expectation and it hasn't met mine, I'm genuinely jealous of you because you're exactly. in a better position. I want to be you. I don't want you to be me. I can't help it. If I don't like an episode like the Kill the Moon, but then who did? It's not a place I want to be in. I want to be loving the fact that the moon is an egg. I want to be I want to be excited like that, like so many people I'm sure were in whatever mental institution they came from. I'm joking again. Yeah, it's just that's our happy note, I think, is that however this Christmas episode goes, and we'll be talking about it next week with Christian, you know, we do genuinely hope that you enjoy it and you have a great time watching it, and that it's, and we hope that we will have a great time watching it as well. So just bear that in mind when you're writing your comments, if you write any comments, or you slam your headphones down in frustration that we've not been particularly up and enthusiastic about it. But that's it, isn't it, Brian? You know, we can only say what we feel. We're here to be honest. You know, we're not here to tell you what you want to hear. And
And that's the main thing to me. Okay, when we first started Casterbrus, or when Christian and Anthony first started, and then I joined in, the main thing was it was our opinion site. It wasn't like a Doctor Who fact site, you know, or a Doctor Who hype site. It was our opinions and the things that we loved and didn't love about the show. You know, and I've been a fan since I was nine years old. Okay, so that's about 30 years of Doctor Who for me right now. And I do love the show. I still love the show. I love the fact that it's still on, and I love the fact that we can watch new things. But yeah, there are certain things that just aren't going. I mean, what the show's 50 years worth of history now. Mm. 50 years worth of stuff. You're bound to sit there and find something that you don't like within 50 years worth of information.
Absolutely.
You know? Hell, look at the Beatles. The Beatles, you know, if you're a Beatles fan and you love their music, there's got to be a song or two in there that you're just kind of meh, not so keen on that, you know. And I'll be honest, whenever George Harrison breaks out the sitar, generally not a fan of those songs. I don't know what it is, but there's a vibe in those songs that I'm not feeling, you know. So as much as I love the Beatles, as much as I love Doctor Who, there are things that are going to stand out as not being so hot. And then there are other things that are just going to be so damn glorious, you know. And I don't want to, you know, I pick on Moffat's writing, I guess, a lot. But, you know, he's also done some really great stuff. You know, he gave us the 50th, which I really enjoyed. You know, he gave us Time Crash. He gave us The Girl in the Fireplace, you know. So I don't want to knock it completely, but I do want to be honest on the opinion site that, you know, we run, and I feel that's what it's about. And I do hope that people sit there on Christmas Day and enjoy this Christmas episode. My actual sincere hope is the true belief that every TV episode of Doctor Who, or any episode or any movie or any book or comic book out there that is brand new, is always somebody's first.
Yeah.
And I sure hope that somebody is tuning into this Christmas episode on Christmas Day, and they take something from it that makes them continue to watch the show and check out the history of the show. You know, the more fans, the more fun, the more potential that this show has to go another 50 years, you know. So, and that's the beautiful thing. Okay. You know, to leave, I guess, on a positive note, if that's, you know, obviously our goal here right today, our purview from Christian. I know fans, friends of mine who adore the Matt Smith era and Moffat's writing. Okay, they right now are kind of picking up the slack that I will admit I'm leaving, you know, because I can't, in my mind, I can't praise this era of the show right now, because it's just, I'm just not feeling it as much. I will always tell people till I'm blue in the face, watch Doctor Who, and I will even say that I don't care what the era is, I will tell them just watch it, it's a good show, stick with it, it's awesome. But I have friends that really champion this era. And that's what's beautiful about it. Everybody takes something different from this show. Everybody likes eras more than the others. Why are there all those My Favorite Doctor polls out there? It's because not everybody in the world says Tom Baker. because not everybody in the world has the same brain and thinks the same. We all take and like different things. And that's what's beautiful about 50 years worth of history of anything, is that everybody will always take something different home to enjoy. You know, I'm looking forward to seeing Peter Capaldi on Christmas Day. I think that's a great positive. So, you know, that's where we're at.
Well, I think we will leave it there. Good luck to all the cast and crew of the Doctor Who on the reception to the episode. Good luck to all the fans that you will actually be exactly what you're after this Christmas. And for those who aren't so sure, like Mr. Terranova here, he is hoping that you'll come back feeling that it was a slice of Doctor Who that was well worth consumption. To everyone out there who's listening, including Christian, who will be listening as he edits this up, have a Merry Christmas, and the same to all your families out there, and whatever holidays that you do enjoy, I hope you enjoy them. Goodbye.